chant together. The first verse is the prayer verse. You can just follow it. I'll chant, that you just repeat after me for the first one, and then we'll chant down through verse 4 together. But let's do the first one and repeat, okay? Katak, kataksha kirana chanta. Kataksha kirana chanta. Naman moha dhiye namaha. Naman moha dhiye namaha. Anantananda Krishnaya. Anantananda Krishnaya. Jagan Mangala Murtiye. Jagan Mangala Murtiye. So then we'll do that one together and then do the four. Kataksha Kirana Chanta. Naman Moha Dhiye Namaha. Anantananda Krishnaya. Jagan Mangala Murtiye. Ahamasmi Sada Bhami. Kadachinahamapriyaha pramayvahamatasiddham sachidananda lakshanam mayevo deti chivyomni jagadgandharvapattanam athohannakatam brahma sarvajnam sarvakaranam nasatav pradyabhijnanat niram shatvan nachanrataha nachashriya vinashanne vinashasyat anashriyat. Now repeat after me. This is the way we're starting. Nashosha plosha vikleda nashosha plosha vikleda chedas chinna bhaso mama chedas chinna bhaso mama satyairapyanilagnyabha oops satyairapyanilagnyambha satyairapyanilagnyambha shastraikimutakalpitaihi shastraikimutakalpitaihi sandhi na shosha plosha vikleda Chedaha Chit Nabasaha Mama. Let me do it again. Nashosha Plosha Vikleda Chedaha Chit Nabasaha Mama. Satyaihi Api Anila Agni Ambaha Shastraihi Kim Uta Kalpitaihi. Na, so na shosha. Shosha means to dry something. Like in the example, just like the sun can, the heat of the sun can dry up leaves and plants and fruits, like our sun is drying up. Can dry it. Shosha. Na shosha cannot be dried. Plosha cannot be burnt. Burnt to ashes is plosha. Vikleda means to be separated through water. Like if I poured water onto some clay or onto some earth, it'll separate. So vikleda is to become saturated and separated through water, vikleda. So then chedaha, to cut through something. So this is what we call a dwandra compound, right? So it means it cannot be dried, nor burnt to ash, nor separated with water, nor cut with a weapon. Chinnabasaha mama. So I am not for me, mama, for me, who am the chit nebasaha, who am the consciousness which is like space. Nebas is space. So nebasaha is an genitive, adjectival to mama. So me, this space of consciousness, the consciousness is which is like space. For me, there is no drying or burning to ash or separating through soaking with water or cutting, like cutting with a shastra, with a weapon. And so what it says here is this, we have to, this is a interesting verse, a satyaihi api. Even with those things which are real, satya, satyam, like satyam mitya. So within mitya, within this creation, just like space itself, akasha itself, cannot be dried or burnt or saturated or cut. Space, which, and here we have two orders of reality. In this, there's only one order of reality, like space as one of the five elements. It's the most subtle of the elements. It's all pervasive. So space itself can't be dried, or it can't be burnt, and it can't be wetted, you know, and it can't be cut. So here it goes. Satyaihi api, even though real, we'll see in this in a minute. Anila. Anila means the wind. Agni is the fire. Ambas is the water. The shastraihi, shastraihi, so nava shastraihi, the shastras are the weapons. So what then, kim uta kalpitahi, what to say when they're mitya? So this is the idea. It's kind of a beautifully constructed verse. The space of consciousness. Consciousness is likened to space. Even when we look at the five elements within this empirical reality, right? Even within this empirical reality, space as one of the elements is more subtle than all of the other elements. The wind cannot dry it, right? The fire, the agni, cannot burn it. The water cannot wet the space. And the weapons cannot cut it, right? In this order of reality itself, space, being more subtle, cannot be polluted or attacked by any, or changed or modified by any of the other four elements, right? So even within this order of reality, right, this waking state, this is true in terms of space. Space itself is so subtle that none of the other elements can really touch it, right? Like if you want to cut it with a shastra, it would just go through and space would not be cut. You can't take a shastra, a knife, and go like this and rip through the space. Right? Space is more subtle, so nothing happens. You can't wet it, you can't dry it, etc. So satyaihi api, so he says, even by all of these, wind, air, fire, etc., and weapons, even with all of these, being real, being satya. Satya means they're the same order of reality. Even they're not able to touch the space. Kim uta kalpitaihi. What to say when they're mitya? So now the idea is this. The Atma has been likened to space. Space is a drishtanta for the Atma, right? And so for this adrishtanta, an illustration for the self. It's, you know, so that you can get some sort of a grasp of the all-pervasiveness and the subtility of the Atma, because it's likened to space, which of all of the elements, space is the most subtle. Okay. Of all of these elements, space being the most subtle, everything exists within space, but space remains what we call absolutely asanga. Means it's absolutely unattached. Nothing can be done to it because it's more subtle. Okay. Even when the same elements in the same order of reality, all in the waking state, are trying to do something, they cannot. So what to speak of the Atma, which is the self of space? You know, the space itself is objectified by the Atma, by the self. Space is objectified by the self. The self pervades even the space. So your being is more subtle even than space. And the space, air, fire, water, earth are kalpita. Kalpita means mitya. Means upon analysis, they have no independent being at all. Right? They're infinite. They're infinitely divisible. There's no way that you can even grasp or say that anything within this creation, once analyzed, has any reality at all, because you can't find a thing. You can't find a thing here. All you can find is an infinitely divisible conglomerate of smaller and smaller nama rupas. So that's why Swamiji never even uses rupa anymore. He says, These are names within names within names within names, because even a rupa, a form, that you, what you call a form, is really a conglomerate of smaller forms. So really, everything that you experience here is only names within names within names within names, ultimately of what? Of what is actually there. And what is actually there is the Sat-Chit, the self-evident conscious being, which is Brahman. And so all of this, because you can't find any substance other than Brahman, all of this are just simply names within names within names of Brahman. That fact, if we recognizing the existence of this, the experience of this, we can't say that it's Satyam, that it has an absolute reality. Can't say that it has an absolute reality, because you can't find it to give it that absolute reality. It's always subject to coming into being and going out of being. But you experience it. And because it is experienced, you can't say that it's what we call tucham, non-existent, non-existent or not there. We experience it, because you experience something, that doesn't make it real. That's a wonderful thing to understand, because people try, you know, you negate the universe and all of this as an illusion and apparent and all of that. You really have to understand what it is. The universe is here experienced by us. It has its own order. I don't know what people mean when they say it's an illusion. If you're going to use that word, you really have to, you have to unfold it. You have to unpack it to make it clear what you mean by that. So when we say mitya, we don't mean it's an illusion. We mean that it's an order of reality. It's an order of reality where something that's classified as mitya is something that we experience, but upon analysis, we find it's just name, names within names within names of Brahman. Brahman is the substance of this creation. I think that's a beautiful way to see it, because you stop just dismissing it as though it's nothing. It's not that it's nothing. It's Brahman. This is Brahman, but it's mitya in the sense that all of the nama-rupas that we experience, right, really have for their content only the Sat-Chit-Atma, only the conscious being, which is yourself. So that's the important thing here. So that's why he uses here when he says Satyahi, all of these things are real in reference to space. All of these weapons or all of these other elements are real in the sense that they're the same order of reality that space is enjoying. Right? What to say of the Atma, which does not, is more subtle than space, but doesn't enjoy the same order of reality at all. Because just like space, air, fire, water, earth, all are equally objectifiable. And all also resolve, like in, for instance, in deep sleep. They all resolve. In other words, you don't have to, your being does not require the experience of space. Your being does not require the experience of anything, right? Everything that is experienced is unnecessary and negatable in reference to your own being, right? Which is a nice thing to understand. The universe, the objectifiable universe, is not required for your being to be as it is. It is kalpita, it is mitya. That's why if the whole creation were to go away, nothing would happen. It's very, very similar, maybe the nicest, the most, I think, absolutely accurate way to understand it is like when you wake up from a dream and the whole dream is gone. No universe, dream universe is gone, but nothing has happened. What is actually there just remains absolutely untouched, and that's a beautiful experience that we have. It's an illustration. It's something that we have in the universe, happening in the universe, to help us really to understand the relationship of this universe to myself. Understanding the relationship of the dream universe to my own being is very helpful in understanding the waking state to my own being. In fact, in the Mandukya Upanishad, if you remember in the first and second chapter where Gaudapada is really working with the relationship, and all the way through actually with the relationship between the dream and the waking state to the self, you can make distinctions between the waking state and the dream state. One lasts longer than the other, this type of thing. You know, and there's memory, like in the waking state, like what happened yesterday, I can remember. It carries over through today in terms of my dream. That's not necessarily true in the dream state. When I'm in a dream state, I don't necessarily, it doesn't carry over to my dreams of yesterday in terms of my memory or pratyabhijna or anything else. It's all contained. So those differences are there. But in terms of the relationship of the dream as an objectifiable universe, and the relationship of the jiva within the dream, right? And the relationship of the between the in the waking state to the Atma, there's no difference that can be made. Yeah. You make a difference between the two, but in reference to Atma, the same satya mitya is there. Yeah. You might say the waking state has a more real mitya, a more substantial mitya. But that's meaningless to say. Mitya is mitya. You know, so mitya is it, mitya. There's no difference in the order of reality in reference to the Atma. There's a difference of reality in reference to each other. We'd say one is vyavahara, empirical shared reality. One is pratibhasika, subjective reality. Now we accept all that, but what is the difference between the two in reference to the self? And so there's no difference. And so that's why the relationship between you and the dream is so valuable to contemplate on. The relationship between you and your imagination is so valuable to contemplate on. You've got a really deep understanding of Maya. You have your own little piece of Maya. You have that capacity. It's a limited capacity. It's not that what we call sarvajna, huh? From the mind is limited, the amount of the knowledge, the experiences contained in the mind and in the unconscious have their own limitations, but the maya is the same. Yeah? That maya capacity. So, no, it's not the same. Well, talk to the dream character from within the dream, from within the imagination, where they are existing and contained within the structure of that maya projection. So that's the type of thing that we have to say. So that's what he's bringing this example here. What to say if space, but in reference to the akasha, how nothing can touch the space. If nothing can touch the space, even when we're looking at within the same order of reality, what to say when the whole creation is mitya? How can that now, in reference to myself, it's not an equal. Anila, vayu, the air drying me. It's mitya vayu, right? The mitya vayu. If the satya vayu can't touch the space, how can what is mitya touch me? That's not possible. Two orders of reality. So that's that verse. It's a little bit connected to the last verse.
It's a very famous verse.
In the last verse, they're talking about vinasha, destruction. And the core of the last verse is nothing can destroy me. For me, there is no destruction. I cannot, myself, I can't, the self cannot destroy the self. The Atma can't, you know, destroy itself. Why? Because it has pratyabhijna. In other words, whatever tools of experience you have available to you, right, are objectifiable, and you recognize your presence throughout every experience that you've ever had. So even if you had a nightmare, the most nightmarish dream, when you wake up from that, there's a pratyabhijna. Oh, I had this nightmarish dream, and in the dream I was cut into little tiny pieces, you know, and burnt to ashes in the fire. Wasn't that an interesting dream? Because nothing happened to me, right? Nothing happened to me in reference to the child who is not there anymore. The 4-year-old child, the 13-year-old child, the 20-year-old. Those experiences, those little child bodies, etc., they're long, long gone. Right? But those were me. It wasn't somebody else. They were me. They're no longer here. But I am. That pratyabhijna is there. I can say, I was that little girl and I had that experience, you know. Or I was the one that had that emotion. Or I am the one who had that reaction. That was my reaction. I was the one who was so happy. That pratyabhijna means whatever the experience may be, that experience does not do anything to me. Right? I withstand the experience. One of the greatest examples we have for that pratyabhijna, and we use it all the time as a prakriya, is waking, dream, deep sleep. You know, where these three experience states of experience completely negate each other. And everything that you had taken to be yourself, for instance, in the waking state, the waking body and the waking life and the waking dream, waking situation, that is completely gone in the dream. In the dream, you have another body, another situation. The body might not even look like you, or you might have no body, right? But that is me. I don't have any doubt about it. That is my dream, and that is my waking state, and that is my deep sleep state that I can describe. I can't describe it when I'm in deep sleep, but I can describe it. So that pratyabhijna means that I am free from all objectifiable experience. I am free from time. I am free from space. I am free from change. Any objectifiable experience, subject-object experience, which goes all the way to every single thing I've ever identified with is me. So the body and the mind and the sense organs and your buddhi, your emotions, your relationships, your talents, your glories or whatever, your accomplishments, right? All of those are mithya. They belong to the world of mithya. And then as we get more understanding of that, all that belongs, all the objectifiable world, right? I am free of that. I am free of that. That is my swarupa, my nature is a sangha. It has no attachment or relationship with that from my standpoint, right? From the standpoint of my mind, body, sense organs, it totally depends on me, but I don't depend on it. So that being the case, give me a second, I lost something I wanted to say there. That being the case, who does this body, mind, sense organs belong to? Who does it belong to? Well, you have to say it belongs to Ishwara. It's part and parcel of Ishwara. It's not me. Myself is a sangha. And so this body, mind, sense organs, then whose is it? You know? You can say, well, it's part and parcel of Ishwara. You know? And then what is Ishwara? Well, Ishwara itself is mithya. But the mithya Ishwara is dependent. For something to be mithya, it means it's dependent on something else for its being. So what is this mithya Ishwara dependent upon for it to be called mithya? It can only be dependent upon non-dual conscious being. Because non-dual conscious being, which is me, is ultimately what is satyam, what is real. It doesn't come into being or go out of being. It is the being which all things enjoy. And so this body, mind, and sense organs, and this, and this, and this, every body, mind, and sense organs enjoys conscious being. The whole universe enjoys conscious being. And so the whole universe enjoying one conscious being means that everything in that universe which enjoys one conscious being belongs to that infinite expression that we call Ishwara. So I can as well say, if I know what I'm talking about, I can say I am Ishwara because the whole universe is an expression of me, of conscious being, which is me. And I can say this is Ishwara. This body is Ishwara. This mind is Ishwara. These reactions are Ishwara, you know. The sense organs are Ishwara. There's nothing that is not Ishwara, right? but it's part to the whole, but still Ishwara. You know, like it's like this is this leg is me and this hand is me. All these parts are me. They're me, 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 me. Right? They're not don't belong to anybody else. This hand doesn't belong to anybody else but me, right? But who's the me is a lot more than this hand. Right? So that's what we have to understand. That means this mithya creation, this whole mithya creation, as Ishwara, you know, includes my body, mind, sense organ, my prarabdha karma, absolutely everything that is happening, even the reactions of the jiva. Because the ajnanam also, and all of the laws, you know, allow for those reactions. So you can't even claim a reaction. You can't claim a reaction because there are too many cause and effect relationships that have gone into the production of that reaction. It is a production of many threads of cause and effect that have come together in order to produce that. That's why Swamiji sometimes gives these meditations. I get them too, because I got them from him. He gives these meditations where if you're having difficulty with somebody, you sit together imaginally, you know, and you tell your side of the story and how you got into this situation, and you let the other person for you get tell that story and how you got into that situation, and then you see the complexities. You can even go to the parents and the grandparents and the time that led up to the production of this reaction. So any reaction is so much more than you. So much more. And so when these things are turning around and going on, you can always offer all of it to Bhagavan. Say, this reaction is yours, Bhagavan. I give it to you. The stress that's happening, you know, between us, I give it to you because it's yours. Please try to fix it up a little bit. Do what you can. But it's important. We think this kartritvam, at least it's a jiva, I'm responsible for this and for that. You know, at least this is my creation. But you know what? It's not. There's just too many things involved to for you to sing in a singular way take ownership for anything, actually. That's important. It's important to understand. So here, even in this fourth verse, which we pretty much finished, but is related to this next one, the next one was, and nobody else can destroy me, not just Pratyabhijna. Another person, I can't destroy myself, another person can't come and destroy me, the Atma. Why? Because I'm not objectifiable. I have no parts. What can anybody do? No, nobody can do anything. Nor do I have any ashraya. Because I myself have no parts, I can't be contained. It means I'm not contained in this body. I am not contained. I have no parts. How am I going to be contained? Space isn't contained. I'm more subtle than space. My being is not contained. It's not contained in the body. It's not contained in the thoughts. It's not contained in the moods. It's not contained in the ahankara. It's not simply not contained. And not only that, it's not contained anywhere. It's not contained in space. It's not even contained in space. So we tend to think, well, space is all pervasive and I pervade space, so I fill the space. No, I don't fill the space. The space depends upon me, but for me there is no space. I am just simply conscious being that has no dimension at all. For dimension to be big or small or tall or short or heavy, any of these type of things, you need to be within space. You need to have dimension. When you think of yourself or in Nididhyasana, when you just be me, I say, you know, sometimes I'll just say, just be yourself, knowing that you know what that means, just to go, just be yourself. And now if you were to ask, okay, now, how tall are you? How tall are you? And you're like, how tall am I? Totally irrelevant question, you know. It just doesn't belong. The question does not belong, has no place. What color am I? You know, how big am I? Because when we think of infinite, we think of infinite in terms of size, of space maybe, spatially infinite. I have no space. Space is an element. Things exist within space, but space itself is projected. It's part of Maya. So my being infinite or non-dual has nothing to do with size. It has to do with there being one without exception. The being, one without a second. The being, the me that I am right now, is its full size. It's free from size. You're not having ever at any time a partial me. There is no partial experience of me, because me, conscious being, is non-dual, right? It doesn't have time or space. So it is complete within itself. Why is it non-dual, one without a second? Because in this projected universe, right, nothing in this projection can ever in any way be separate or away from me. That doesn't mean that I'm spatial. It means that I am what is here, free of time and space, but time and space and dimension are a projection that takes place in me, or has me as its adhishtana, as its basis, because satya mitya. So this is a really important thing to know, because also when we think, I am you, and I am the self of all beings, I'll think, well, you are over there, and you're over there, and, you know, and all the beings, you know, in China or on the different planets, they're way over there, so the self must really pervade the whole universe. The one self pervades the whole universe, and so part of my pervading self over there is illumining that body. You see what I mean? We can actually hang on to spatial dimension somehow. We can, our minds can do many things. But that's not what it is. When you dream, if you have a dream or you have an imagination, you don't have the spatial dimension which you're projecting. You know, like if I ask you to imagine a beautiful meadow with people walking through the meadow and the animals there and the trees are there, you know, you're not all of a sudden taking the size of that projection. It is, nothing happens to you. But the time and space and dimension, you know, are something that exist within Maya. That's the magic of Maya. You know? People can draw on a flat sheet of paper dimension. It's so real. You can watch a movie and you experience three dimension. But in reality, there's no dimension at all. It's Maya, you know. And all of that dimension that we experience takes place in one non-dual conscious being, which is me. And that's why when you turn your attention toward yourself, these words like dimension or space or time or color are totally meaningless. They don't even touch you. The self that you are is the self that you are, complete. There's no more. There's no more self. It is exactly what it is. There's no space to have a bigger experience or a smaller experience. And the self that you are is exactly the self that is Ishvara, is exactly the self that is all beings. It's not like I have this little self and Hero has his little tiny self and Lucky's got his little self and the butterflies have their little self. And so they all have a little self dependent upon the size of their upadhi. You know, they don't have a self dependent on the upadhi or the conditioning adjunct. That's why it says free. I am free of ashraya. Ashraya means anashraya. My being is totally independent, free of anything that it depends on to be. So I am anashraya means, in terms of this physical body, my being has no dependence whatsoever on this physical body. Anashraya. My being has no dependence upon a mind or sense organs or anything that can be, you might think, can contain it in any way. It has no ashraya. Anything that could have an ashraya or be a support of one thing to another exists within Maya. For me, there is no ashraya. There's nothing that I depend on, and there's nothing that depends upon me from my own standpoint. From the standpoint of maya, maya is mitya. It totally depends upon me. But from my standpoint, there is only me. It's like the pot totally depends on the clay pot. The pot totally depends upon the clay for it to be its form. Everything depends totally on clay. But from the standpoint of the clay, there's no pot. There's only the Satchitatma. There's only the Satchit clay. Right? There's only clay. And so here, there is no containment. Even, and there's no dependency, there's no containment. Even if you just sit quietly in kind of an open-eyed meditation, you recognize, and you just be with yourself, and then through your sense organs, you're experiencing the world. But yourself, even though there is nothing away from yourself, from your being is free of time and space. Here we are, in space. There's nothing over in the farthest corner there of the room is still within me, in conscious being. Right? But I have not gone over to the corner. I don't all of a sudden become big or fill the room, but there's nothing in the room, in whatever my experience is, that is away from me. And so that's a wonderful meditation, just not to create that reality, that truth, but to recognize it, you know. And then you recognize that your being is always exactly the same way, that you're not walking, you're not talking, you're not seeing, you're not doing anything. And yet because of you, all of these things take place. Because of you, the eyes have consciousness. Because of you, the ears can hear. Because of you, your body can move and walk, but you're not doing any of those things. That can be a lot of words, but they actually have to point to the reality of what you experience. So here, after having said this verse, he goes back and looks, see, in this reality, just like wind cannot dry me and cannot dry space, and fire cannot burn space, and water cannot wet space, and the shastra, and weapons cannot cut space, you know. Even though they're real, real means they're the same order of reality. What to speak of all of these elements being able to touch me in any way, because all of them are mitya. It's a totally different order of reality. It's like walking along. Swamiji sometimes uses the example of the shadow. You're walking along with your shadow, and then you become afraid of your shadow as though it can do something to you. It's a different order of reality, right? It cannot do anything. So that's the idea of this verse. Let's do number 6. We have 5 minutes, but I'll just want to read it. Okay. Abharupasya vishwasya, abharupasya vishwasya, banam vasanidharvina, Panam vasunitervina kadachin nava kalpeta, kadachin nava kalpeta, bacha hantena sarvagaha, bacha hantena sarvagaha. All of these are really showing Atma is Brahman. You know, they're all Mahavakya verses. Abharupasya vishwasya banam ba sannidehe vina kadachit na avakalpeta ba cha aham tena sarvagaha. This is the banam, the shining, or the appearance, the being, the knownness. Ba, we don't have this really word in English. It means that all of this, like all of you are known. You're available for knowledge. You're available for to be known. So you're shining. So it says, Vishwasya abharupasya vishwasya genitive. of this universe, which itself is abharupam. It's not shining. Anything that is objectifiable, right, this is the idea, anything that is objectifiable is dependent upon my consciousness for it to be known, for it to shine. Right? It itself is not shining of its own accord. Like say, even we say that even for the mind, which as sattva, as though reflects consciousness, it's not the best word. Okay. Say if I say, okay, I, the conscious being, am illumining my mind. And so all of the every thought is known to me. But that mind, that vritti, is itself not self-shining. Because then there would be two of us. Like, I'm aware of the vritti, and the vritti is aware of me. So it'd be like, hello, hello. There's only one conscious being there. And that conscious being is me. Because I can't get behind that, right? When we do the subject-object differentiation, you can't get behind yourself, right? That the buck stops somewhere. When you're doing the subject-object differentiation, there's a point you reach where you cannot go any farther, right? And that is the point where the body, the mind, the sense organs, all of your experiences, time, space itself, the ahankara, everything is objectified. And then only you are left. Even the means of knowledge that we use, like your sense organs and your mind, the buddhi, all of these are objectified by consciousness. They all are known because of my own swarupa, my own nature. Right? If they had their own consciousness, then there would be two of us. This conscious mind is looking at me, and I am looking at it. But that's not the situation. In fact, this universe means everything that exists within time and space and is objectifiable is illumined by me, and I myself am not an object in that universe. Consciousness is not an object in the universe to talk back to me. Right? So even the body, mind, sense organs of every individual, of every living being, enjoys consciousness. But the consciousness for all of you also is not objectifiable, right? So you can talk to me and I can talk to you, but that's really the body within duality talking back and forth. It's not consciousness. That consciousness is independent of that, and the body, mind, sense organs are dependent on it. So here, abharupasya vishwasya banam, this shining, this knownness, this consciousness that the entire universe enjoys because it itself doesn't have its own consciousness, cannot take place without, vina means without being near, in association with consciousness itself, with being itself. Otherwise, how will it shine? Okay, that's the first line. Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vasishyate Om Shanti 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 Harihi Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Harihi Om.